I want to take this moment to talk a little bit about kind of the big picture of what we are doing with our practice. You know already that the two major orientations of our practice are the cultivation of compassion, ultimate compassion, as well as conventional compassion, bodhicitta, this embracing sense of wanting, as we sang at the beginning of the evening, as we always sing, that all beings have happiness and its causes, be free of suffering and its causes. This is our aspiration, and this animates our practice because we have some conviction for many of us based on experience that, in fact, practice is a way to address and alleviate some of our pain and some of our suffering. It doesn't mean that because we've started to meditate, we never had a bad hair day, no. But it does mean that gradually we can start to recognize the bad hair days as just, you know, different kinds of waves on the ocean of our being. And that's quite different from totally identifying with whatever particular difficulty we're having at the time. We seek a middle way of neither denying that there's pain or distraction or whatever is going through our minds. We don't push it away. Don't fight with yourself when we do with these practices like we did just now. Maybe thoughts are coming up. And sometimes people say, oh, I'm a terrible meditator. I can't do it. And I'm just not the right kind of person. I can't do it. And many of us have said that many times, right? But what we're trying to learn is that actually we don't have to fight. We're actually trying to learn not to fight with ourselves. Now, you might think that that would be something we would be very happy to learn, and we would immediately stop fighting with ourselves because it's not much fun. And it's also, if you've been doing it for most of your life, like most of us, many of us, it's not that productive either, fighting with yourself. But there is a middle way. We do have goals. We have a certain kind of training and certain kind of discipline, which is different from fighting with yourself. Well, I would like to practice regularly. Okay. You do your best. You do your best. And sometimes it doesn't go very well. That's life. Sometimes it rains. You can't control the weather, either externally or internally, but you can carry an umbrella when there's clouds or the weather report is not so good. You can also carry an inner umbrella when you realize that you're... You know, Lama Tenzin said something very interesting. Somebody asked, like, what did he do in the morning? And he said, well, the first thing when he wakes up, he thinks how grateful he is to have this day, you know, to see the sun again, to be with his family, to practice. And then he said, I also notice, it seems I'm ready to get angry today. Do you ever wake, you know, we call it waking up on the wrong side of the bed. It's a strange phrase, especially if your bed is against the wall. I used to think about that when I was a child. There's always one side, but I didn't understand metaphor then. So, you know, noticing that you have an inclination, today I feel tired, mad. Sometimes you wake up and you're just kind of mad. Or something, jealous, uptight, something. So then you can say, okay, well, I'll be careful today. I'm ready to lose my temper today, so I'll be a little careful. Or I'm feeling kind of nihilistic today, so I'll be careful not to act as if my actions have no significance, which is a nihilistic kind of thing. What I'm trying to say is that as practitioners, we do have aspirations, we do have intentions, we're seeking to grow, we're seeking to allow the qualities that we understand to be absolutely already intrinsic in all of us, and we've been talking about this for a long time. The nature of mind itself, as Sangha says, is limpid and clear and without blemish, and those qualities are there. So as practitioners, we're trying to get out of our own way by lightening the load of kind of negativity that we have, whatever form it takes, that prevents us from experiencing the truth about our nature. And so while we don't fight with ourselves, we do have an orientation. When we sit, as we did just now, to relax, to become clearer. But we can't make that happen. We give it space. We give it that possibility. And if we're not clear, we don't fight with ourselves. Oh, my mind's not clear today. But you see, then you've noticed something. So there's abiding, change, and awareness. So if your mind is not still, but rattling with all kinds of thoughts, some of them good, some of them not so good, that's change. That's movement. But you are aware of it. And just in being aware of it, you are present. You are knowing. So you have not a possibility, really, in a sense, of falling out of your practice. If your practice is terrible, people often say, my practice is terrible. What do they mean? I'm distracted, fidgety, I don't really like it today, I'm in rebellion. If instead of, we talk not denying, if you say my practice is terrible, well, at least you're not in denial that something is happening that you don't care for. But also, you don't have to identify with it. You can simply know it. Okay, so this is like ground zero for all practice, to know what is occurring. And then we have different practices, as you know. We have this kind of basic settling that we do at the beginning of every session. We do it always here before we start teaching. And then we also have, we have different practices. Make a distinction between, quote, doing practice and what is really at the core of our lives as practitioners. So at the core of our lives as practitioners is cultivating a capacity to be with ourselves, to be with ourselves in a kind way, to be with ourselves in a real way. Not to pretend that we're something that we're not. In other words, the denial thing, oh, I'm really great, that kind of thing. But also not to fail to recognize the good qualities that we do have and that, in fact, are coming forth through our practice. That's important. That's not pride. That's recognizing that your practice is having fruition. And if you're a practitioner, if you do anything, you want some fruit, right? If you have a job, you want to do it well and feel, the satisfaction of a job well done. If you have a friend, you want to feel like you're a good friend and that they're a good friend to you. The things that we do have fruitional states, we can say. So to what we're really looking for, the life of a practitioner, we're really looking for some fruition. Now, it turns out, I know, because we talk together, that the conversation often revolves around, I'm doing this practice, but I'm not doing it enough. And then I have this other practice, and I can't keep up with all these practices. And so I think I'll give up everything altogether. I want to distinguish the reason we do the practices that we do is to cultivate our compassion and our wisdom. And the presence that underlies and suffuses both of those. We want to open to the vastness of our own ocean. We want to recognize that whatever happens is a wave on that ocean and isn't really separate. You never really lose the ocean that you are. But we forget that on a regular basis, and we get upset about this and that. And it's like our whole sense of who we are collapses down into this, moment of anger or jealousy or uptightness or whatever our particular distortion is, right? So everything we say sometimes, everything is either wisdom or a distortion of it. can also say, because ultimately love and wisdom and our path are totally united, we can say that everything is love or a distortion of it. What that means is that just as water, even when it freezes, is still water, we actually always have the goodness that we are, but it gets occluded. So we do these different practices, and so some of you are focusing on a particular set of practices, the foundational practices, for example. Then that's your focus. Some of you are focusing on developing a certain kind of skill set, let's say, the skill set of not being overly judgmental, or the skill set of recognizing the good qualities that you have and not worrying that that's too prideful, for example. Okay, so if you've been practicing for a while and, you know, we talk together, you talk with your mentors, and in this way we explore. Everybody has nobody's the same, right? So everybody is going to move through this process in a slightly different way, with particular emphases. And so it's important to be in touch with where you are, with your mentor, with us, to kind of optimize your mind really mixing with the practice. And it's very easy, and we all know, especially in Tibetan practice, to feel, okay, here's the agenda, and I got to follow the agenda, and you know what, it's too much, so bye-bye, forget about all that. And what we're doing with the Dzogchen cycles, it's like, as the different practices that we have are generally centered around particular figures like Guru Rinpoche or Tara, and one way, and we're seeking to have a relationship with those beings. As Terry reminded me, or David Germano when he was here a while, said, you know, these kinds of practices, it's really all about relationship. It's not just a relationship with Tara or with Guru Rinpoche or with Vajrasattva or whoever the being is. It's also a relationship with the quality that they are, that they embody. As Harvey said, all of these figures on the walls, we can tell you their names. And even more important for us as practitioners is the quality that is associated with them. So we practice green Tara, for example. Why? To get in touch with the particular quality of tender, tender compassion that she embodies, and that is part of our path of growing into, you know, compassionate individuals. We practice Guru Rinpoche because he is the source of all of the tantric teachings of Tibet. He is an embodiment in one level of the power of practice, at another level, the actual nature of our own mind, which is the actual center of our practice, to recognize that. Once we really enter into and directly experience that, then compassion and wisdom just flow together and open. Now, to make ourselves available to that, we do various practices of learning how to settle, of purifying, and so on, because if... if water doesn't settle, if there's too much, you know, I remember as a child, we'd go to the beach, New York, Jones Beach, after the hurricanes, which were never like hurricanes down here, but the ocean would be full of tar, the beach would be full of tar and all kinds of wood, and it'd be a mess, in short. So sometimes there are hurricanes, but then eventually it would, you know, the sea would take it back again. And we practice, you know, if the sea is full of tar, then there's one kind of thing that you have to do. If it's full of seaweed, then there's another kind of thing you have to do. So we have different aspects of our own afflictions, our own habit patterns, maybe is the best way to talk about them. We have habit patterns that one way or another, at least according to classical Buddhist way of categorizing things, involves some type of dysfunctional desire, hatred, ignorance, pride, jealousy, and we can think of other things too, right? And these all operate kind of like seaweed floating on the ocean. You can't see the clarity of the water. You can't see the clarity of your own mind because there's stuff floating in it. So we do practices to thin out the habitual seaweed that prevents us from seeing who and what we really are. All of these practices do that, and they do that in particular ways. So there's seaweed, but there's also tar. There's also dead fish. There's all kinds of things floating around in our own experience, and different practices will address them more or less directly. That's one reason we have these different practices in our tradition. At the same time, we focus on whatever your practice, your key practice is, and that you either you are oriented toward that because you just feel you are, or mostly for those of you who are ongoing practitioners, we talk about this, right? So you have something that you're focusing on. So then you learn another practice. No, no, how can I do this? I can't do all these practices. Well, nobody is actually asking you to do all these practices every day. So I'm saying this now specifically. This doesn't maybe apply to some of you, but the people who are doing the cycles program, for example, the Guru Rinpoche practice that we learned recently, if you're doing the foundational practices, you do that every day. Okay, that's your practice. You do that every day. You don't necessarily do the Guru Rinpoche practice every day, so you don't have to feel overwhelmed. You do it when you can, maybe ideally on the lunar 10th, and also we come together and do it together. So it's a different kind of relationship. It's like friends, right? So some friends you see every day, and other friends, you don't see them every day, but you stay in touch. You say the mantra every day. You know, you send an email now and then, you give a call, so that when you finally do come together, you haven't lost connection. You keep that connection. So we don't want anyone to feel overwhelmed by, oh my God, you know, it's like writing thank you letters. You don't have to write thank you letters every day to everybody you know, right? On some occasions, you write thank you letters because it keeps the relationship warm. You want to do that. Also, it is part of us as a community having a ritual life as a community. So we come together now and then, and we keep trying to regularize this. We did come together a few weeks ago to do the Guru Rinpoche practice, right? We'll do it again. And so you'll know it. You'll have that connection with Guru Rinpoche. It's not that you have to do it every day if you are already doing something else every day. We do encourage and invite and feel it's important to have daily practice, but not to feel overloaded and anxious, much less guilty or overwhelmed or running away because, and yet this happens. It happens to everyone. I've certainly been through it. And also, but what I see now is, so in several cases, I was taught practices. You know, we would go visit Keizan Sambo, for example. Well, we just had a short time with him, and he would teach us a lot. And it would take years, sometimes decades, honestly, before I really sat down and did the practice that he taught. Because I was doing other practices, which he had told me I should do, right? So, but I kept a connection. And then when I finally had time to really do it, it was like an old friend. You know, okay, now let's really sit down together, and we're really... But all those years of having that connection is very important. It's like when you meet someone, you know, when you're young and then you don't see them for a long time, but you hear about them or you're on Facebook with them and then you finally get together again, even if it's 20, 30 years later. There's something. It's deep. There's a relationship. So we offer this to you, for those of you who are feeling overwhelmed, to... you know, just to see that there's a, this is not like a kind of, you know, military agenda that you have to do. No, you're doing your main practice. You do your main practice. But why not start a connection with Guru Rinpoche, with Green Tara, with Yeshe Tsogyo, with Tomo, the Black Goddess? You know, these are relationships that you can cultivate. And, you know, if you are feeling overwhelmed, talk to somebody. That's why you have mentors. That's why we're here. Or if it's just not feeling right for you, talk to somebody. You know, Namkhin Norbu Rinpoche used to say the tantric vehicle, which is what we are all participating in, these tantric practices, are like a big house with many doors. It's not like you've got to go in the side door. You'll never get inside the house. There's a front door, back door. So, and you know that those of you, when we talk with you, sometimes we, you know, we don't just throw the book at you and say, we throw it at you a little bit if you want to follow the tradition. You know what's in the book. But, you know, as Ajahn Rinpoche said, the first day we met him, he said, everybody's different. How can I tell you all the same thing? So there's this negotiation that we're always doing between a kind of traditional way, you know, a time-honored, may I say, and very positive way of doing things, and also recognizing that those were the ways that people did who were living in caves or monasteries or practice communities. They didn't have jobs, they didn't have families, they didn't have to worry about an income. So we're in the 21st century here. We mostly have jobs, we have responsibilities, right? And yet we are serious practitioners. We really have an aspiration to plumb the depths as much as we can in this life to see who we are. That is to say, our real nature, that real nature that is going to manifest to us even more clearly through practice. When we die, if we've practiced, we might be able to recognize it. That's liberation. So we have this in mind, and we recognize that our progress is not measured by how many practices we do, although we do the practices, but the fruition of our practice comes in how we are in our lives. All right, so when I hear somebody say, oh, you know, it used to be I couldn't sit still and now I can, or it used to be I was always judging myself and just so miserable about who I was and now I'm not, now I'm just here. That's like amazing, right? That's beautiful. That's fruition of practice. That's what we're hoping for. And that's why we do these practices. So again, if there's a sense of the fit not being right, you know, you sort of got in a rut or something like that, and there's nobody who doesn't, as Lama Tenzin said a couple weeks ago, you know, if you're a practitioner, if you drive, you're going to run into traffic, right? It's not because you're a bad driver. There's traffic. Things happen. If you're a practitioner, if you're a human being, you're going to run into obstacles. Doesn't mean you're bad. Doesn't mean you did something wrong. It's called samsara. For the Buddhists, there's samsara. Things don't go right a lot of the time. So if you're a practitioner, you're going to run into bump up against some limit. Are you going to see something in yourself that you've managed to hide all these years and now it's coming up and thank you, no thank you. We don't want to see it. Bye. Okay, but if you could stay with it, maybe you could crack it open. And people do. And it takes time. It takes patience. It takes the support of the community, teachers, the lineage blessings. And we have all those things. So please don't feel overwhelmed. And I know you can't just not feel overwhelmed because I say, please don't feel overwhelmed. But look into what that overwhelm is. Where is that actually coming from? Is it just possibly coming from your overly perfectionist judgmental mind? Whoever said you have to do every practice every day and, by the way, do it perfectly? Nobody said that. That's what practice means. We're practitioners. we practice. The main thing is to stay with your practice and to find a balance that maybe stretches you a little bit because we're all inclined to laziness. But if you're spinning like a top worrying about your practice, that's not where we're headed, right? Then we need to look into what is driving that. And maybe you have a streak of perfectionism that in fact has tortured you your whole life. So now, because of practice, that's what practice does. It surfaces the things that run our lives, our habits, and we start to see them. And that's an opportunity.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, dawnmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness and its causes. May all beings always be free of pain and its causes.